Welcome to all of you, and I especially would like to take an opportunity to make sure that none of you have forgotten what today is, because if you forgot to set the flowers, the pajamagram, or whatever it was to the significant other or your spouse, I think you're probably in trouble. Happy Valentine's Day. I really do wish to thank all of you for the very gracious and warm welcome to the council that I've received. As Rick has already indicated, this organization is one that is embedded with a rich legacy of strong leadership and effective market development. It's one in which it is, in all honesty, it is a real honor with which to be associated. So at the outset, what I would like to do is to take just a moment to express my gratitude and my appreciation not only to the board, and not only to our country directors who've traveled a great distance and great time to be here, that you will have an opportunity to meet with, and I've actually witnessed a number of the discussions already, but also to the staff in Washington, D.C., for the strong support and for their willingness to assist me in getting out of the gate, so to speak, in a solid fashion. Rick Fruth, Terry Venduska, Wendell Shawman have been extremely supportive, thoughtful, and generous with their time. And I, quite frankly, can't say enough about our staff, especially Eric Erickson, Mike Callahan, and Chris Corey. These six people have been particularly constructive in making certain that I not only understand, but appreciate the scope of the challenge and the opportunities that are presently facing the U.S. Grains Council. Eric and Rick have been real stalwarts in assisting Keith and me, myself, as we figure out how to saddle this horse, if you may. And since this is the Council's 50th annual membership meeting, it is especially appropriate, I believe, for me as a relative newcomer to pause and to recognize for just a moment the vision, the dedication, and the commitment of those of you who have made the Grains Council the great organization that it has become. Now, some of you I've already met, and I'm going to do my best in the next few days to get to know each and every one of you as quickly as I possibly can. But let me say this, that it is a real privilege and a pleasure to be with you today, and I mean that sincerely, and to serve as a member of this team. You know, it's barely possible. I'm certain if it was, I would have heard about it. And so it's probably unlikely that there is someone here who goes back to the very beginning of the Grain Council. But there certainly are many people here, both members and staff, who have devoted many years to this organization as well as to our mission. Now, there is always a risk in doing what I'm about to do, but I honestly believe that I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the longtime commitment and the support of Jerry Salzman and Owen Newland. And I know that Jerry has not been involved as long as Owen, and I suspect that Owen's record can't be beat. Maybe it never will, and frankly, it's probably best that it not be beat, given his commitment. But we are in your debt. We looked and we still look to you collectively for leadership and for guidance, and we will work hard to build on the legacy that both of you and your peers have created, and in order to make the next 50 years as productive as the last. Now, let me assure you, if you look at this head of gray here, it's not going to be me that's here for the next 50 years. But we are forever in your debt, Owen and Jerry and all of you who have made such an effort at this. Now, as you all know, quite clearly, that we are a member-led organization. Collectively, we represent many different sectors. Our new Senior Vice President for Industry Relations and Operations, Keith Heffernan, was, according, and I quote him, probably at best 5 years of age when he became the executive director for the Iowa Corn Growers Association, because neither of us wished to admit our real age. But that was when Owen Newland, Darwin Stolte, and other council leaders like Bob Book and a number of others came to Iowa with the resources and, most importantly, a commitment to pass the first ever voluntary corn checkoff for the purpose of raising producer funds to be focused on market development. But as Keith has so effectively pointed out a number of times, The U.S. Grains Council is extremely fortunate in its uniqueness. And it is unique in that it is perhaps the only commodity market development organization whose members, all of equal vote, come from not just the producer sector, but also the sectors of agribusiness, finance, trade, and policy sectors. My own background prior to taking a temporary job in Washington a few years ago was in production agriculture. Others have different experiences and different perspectives. And quite frankly, in all of this, we would be terribly remiss if we failed to overlook the fact that it was our friends in the sorghum industry, members of the Grain Council, along with the gentleman who is still with us, as I understand, Albert Harp of Texas, who actually had the vision to put these kinds of market development strategies together. And I think we ought to give all of those folks a great round of applause. Please join me in doing so. But when you stop and reflect on this, collectively we share a simple and a very important mission, and that is to build export markets for U.S. grains, to help feed a hungry world, and to increase economic opportunities for not just producers, but agricultural processors and marketers, all sectors of our industry, as well as those of our customers. And that mission, in my view, remains as vital today as it was 50 years ago. And yet, if we are to remain relevant, we're going to have to adapt to new and to emerging opportunities. Our challenge going forward is to adapt our strategies to rapidly changing production environment, to evolving consumption patterns, and to an international marketplace that is bigger, that is deeper, and that is more complex and dynamic than ever before. This is a challenge, but in my view, it is an extraordinary opportunity. You know, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, between 2 and 3 billion people have joined the world market system. This is an enormous new emergent market. And at the same time, of course, the interesting part of this is many of these people are ultimately going to prove to be very formidable competitors, whether we like it or not. Hundreds of millions of people are joining the global market middle class with an improved diet as a first result. But that improvement is not just going to be caloric in nature, because the world over, given a choice, consumers are expressing a preference for variety, for choice, and protein enrichment. And that ultimately drives our industry. And the potential for U.S. producers and for international partners is enormous. But in addition to the more caloric energy demand that we reflect on, they need more energy of the liquid fuel and power type as well. So as such, our business has become dramatically less static. DDGs, ethanol, biodiesel, and other bio-based products, not really new, but new to the mainstream, present new market opportunities. But there is also a risk. There's a risk from policy uncertainty and from a dynamic technology environment that makes it difficult to ultimately predict long-term winners. Is corn ethanol, for example, a long-term solution to persistent production over capacity? Will cellulosic ethanol reach its potential? Or, in fact, will LJ or other third-generation feedstocks emerge as the solution, and for that matter, ultimately, as a competitor to corn ethanol? Will the political support for biofuels and bio-based products be sustained not just in the United States, but internationally? Or has that tide crested? The simple fact of the matter is we don't know at this point, but the answers, my friend, have large implications both for producers as well as for global market relationships. And I think it's important to also point out that supply is not static. You know, I can remember in 1975 when we were reflecting on passing that first corn checkoff, and it was because we were staring down the gun barrel of our first 6 billion bushel corn crop. 6 billion bushels. Last year we produced over 13 billion, and we still have 5% of it sitting in the field. The interesting thing is that rates of adoption are going to vary. But we are in the very early stages of a genomics revolution. And as these technologies are diffused and as unused and underutilized agricultural land is called back into production, and as modern production techniques are adapted internationally, and as population growth continues to expand, and then as economies attain maturity, ultimately those populations tend to moderate, agricultural abundance may become the norm, not the exception among the nations of the world. Although not the case the past few years, historically, and clearly even before the advent of seed technology, this was in fact the case. Now, none of this is going to happen overnight, nor will it happen uniformly. Some countries and regions will lead, others will lag, but over time, in my view, it is clear that fundamental economic relationships are being realigned, and that old business models will be challenged, and as a result, we have to adapt. In the last 3 months, I think I've been confronted consistently with a number of tough questions. They're relevant, and they are tough. But the three that continually come back and that right now tend to consume me the most at this time relative to the Grains Council are these three. Are U.S. grain producers competitive? We all think we are, but are we really as competitive as we think? Do we have the right product lineup? And in fact, do we have infrastructure shortfalls even beyond the traditional ones, the lock and dam issues on the Mississippi? Let me reflect on the infrastructure issue. We have to look to this because that ensures that the U.S. ultimately retains and rebuilds a competitive edge in production, transportation, and product differentiation. You know, we're going to have to look to new markets. We're going to have to ensure that we enhance our capacity to deal with emerging and often small country markets that are frankly outside our traditional logistical infrastructure. Are we agile enough? Are we flexible enough? Do we have the ability to increase market share in an even more competitive international marketplace? Can we, in fact, reduce costs more yet? Do we need to develop new products, new distribution chains, and perhaps even new financial arrangements? Are we, as the Grains Council, an organization optimally structured for this new environment? You know, we have a structure that has served us well over time, and clearly, we intend to nurture our areas of strength. But, for example, are we using information technology to its greatest advantage to make our case? And just as clearly, new markets, new products, new technologies, new means of communication, all of these challenges inherited business models that we currently have and that must be ready to adapt. And yet, that too is part of our legacy, that ability to adapt. You know, many of you may be familiar with the history covering the first 25 years of the U.S. Feed Grains Council from 1960 to 1985. This history was written by apparently a very remarkable lady, the former Executive Secretary Marianne Hyatt. If you have not read this, I encourage you to do so. We have it in a PDF form and let us know. We'll email it to you. Because in her history, an important part of her account of that 15-year period of time from 1970 to 1985, particularly turbulent years, and I know most of you here clearly remember them, turbulent for our industry. During that period of time, there were no fewer, and I think this is what is important, there were no fewer than 7 major policy changes implemented by the Grains Council Board and the CEO of that period, Darwin Stolte. That is our legacy of adaptation. For some of us, those years are perhaps ancient history, but most of us, I'm sure, remember this ride. And for my part, I was, as I indicated, a farmer at that time and active in the Iowa and the National Corn Growers Association in the mid-70s to the mid-80s. And as I indicated at the beginning, this was a challenging time for the grain industry and for agriculture because oversupply was common. And it took great foresight, great vision, and it required substantive risk to implement the changes which resulted in today's ability to collect more than $30 million in market development funds from the corn industry alone when in 1975 it was 500,000, all of which have greatly benefited the grains industry and, in my view, agriculture inexorably. And as a result, I think it is important to do a bit of a shout-out right now in that it is our compelling requirement to assure our friends in the sorghum industry that in 2011 their checkoff effort is equally successful to those in the corn industry, and I can assure you that the Grains Council will be there to assist them in any way they can. But the point in all of this is simply this. Change is a constant. We are here today to celebrate 50 years of service, and we are still here only because this organization has repeatedly risen to the challenge of change. And working together, we will clearly be able to do that again. So it's my privilege to be here, and I, as I've indicated already, am truly honored to have been given the opportunity to work for so many important leaders and visionaries. We still have a lot of work to do. I look forward to having this discussion with you, not just in the next 3 or 4 days, but in the months and the next few years ahead. We are member-led, and it is your bottom line in all of this is what really counts. So I look forward to working with you, and I thank you all very, very much for the opportunity to be here today.